Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations, 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on drought. Right after this message. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. Today, it's down to less than 38 days. Now, the global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, disease, plague, and pestilence to reduce Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years under the Club of Rome plan. Well, in Revelation chapter 6, the God of Israel told us exactly the same thing and in essentially the same words, using false prophets, war, famine, and disease. In 1920, nearly 50% of our people lived on the land as subsistence farmers, producing their own food, and food for the rest of the world and for you and me. But today, we Americans have now chosen to live in our cities, and only 3% of us now live out on the land, and 97% of us, then, are no longer self-sufficient in our food production. Now, we Americans produce grain for export, all right, and then we turn around and import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support this global 2000 world population control program. And these globalists with their genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause and let you and I live for ours. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, and it's very entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Now, my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, just go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. In Leviticus 26, verses 19 and 20. That's Leviticus 26, verse 19. We read, "And I'll break the pride of your power, and I will make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass. And your strength shall be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield or increase, and neither shall the trees of the land yield their fruit." That's drought. It's just one of a number of penalties that we accrue for the violation of law. Law is probably the single most important aspect of life. We Americans spend less time learning law than probably any other discipline. We're far more concerned about automobiles and insurance and doctors and medicines and drugs and work than we are about law. Two chapters in the Bible, Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, are the penal clause chapters for the violation of the Old Covenant, or the Old Law, the Old Testament law, that is so reviled today, the Ten Commandments and the statutes and judgments that we got from Moses out at Mount Sinai. Of course, there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. And every time that you break a law, then there's a penalty to pay. And if that weren't true, then you wouldn't have a law. So when you have a law that says speed limit 55, if you didn't have a policeman out there to issue tickets and a court to assess fines and jails to lock you up in, who would drive 55? You would drive just as fast as you wanted to, or as slow as you wanted to, because there's no penalty. It's like telling a kid, it's 10 o'clock, go to bed. He gives you the finger and says, I ain't going to bed, what are you going to do about it? Most Americans wouldn't know what to do with a kid that gave him the finger and said, I'm not going to bed. I was raised in the era before child abuse, so I understood. I knew what law and order was all about. I lived in the kingdom of Gordon. My daddy explained it to me one time. He said, I'm King Edward, and your mother's Queen Mildred, and you're a subject. I make the law, your mother implements the law, and you sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told. And then he went on to say, and if you don't, it's going to hurt real bad. I tested him a couple, three times, and sure enough, he was right. It hurt real bad. But I was a very precocious child. I could learn very rapidly. I didn't get hurt too bad, but I did get hurt once or twice. Well, I wasn't really that smart. I got hurt 10 or 15 times probably, but as I said, you know, I only broke the law once or twice, and then after it hurt real bad, well, then I'd put two and two together, and I quit doing it. Now, Americans are having a problem with the violation of law. We have a violation of economic laws going on, and we find ourselves in tremendous debt here in the United States, unable to meet our payments. We have a health crisis in America. This is the sickest nation in the world. 1% of us in this country are symptom-free. 99% of us have something wrong with us. As recently as 1918, 60% of us were symptom-free. 40% of us had something wrong with us. Well, it's the cause and effect relationship that we see with health laws. You violate a health law and you get sick. You smoke cigarettes, you get cancer. You eat fat and blood and you plug up your arteries. We call that atherosclerosis, and then you're a candidate for bypass surgery, things like that. Now, if you're looking for bypass surgery, that's just the place to go. What you want is more fat, more blood, more unclean meat so that you can develop atherosclerosis a little faster so that you can get to the hospital and get that bypass surgery for a discount price of about $100,000. Well, drought is a penalty that we pay for the violation of law. And in the western United States, we're having a pretty severe drought. Drought's an ugly word. Its very mention evokes images of desolation and suffering. And in the Old Testament, its mere mention suggests punishment by Yahweh. In some instances regarding that punishment, Scripture is not only prophetic, but it's very relevant to our modern times. It is, as I have told Pharaoh, God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's going to do. 7 years are coming, bringing great plenty to the whole land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow them, when all the plenty in the land of Egypt shall be forgotten, and famine will exhaust the land. The famine that is to follow will be so severe that no one will remember what plenty the country enjoyed in times past. The reason why the dream came to Pharaoh twice is because the event is already determined by God, and God is impatient to bring it about. That's cited from Genesis 41, 28 through 32. That was Joseph when he went into Pharaoh and he said, "Let me tell you the story. You wanted to know, and so now I'm going to tell you the answer." Sometimes people will ask me that, and I tell them, you know, I'll tell them the answer to the riddle, and then they'll say, "Well, you know, that's really bad news. I didn't want to hear that." To which I often reply, "Well, if you didn't want to know, why did you ask?" So if you want to know, ask, and probably somebody will tell you, but it may not be what you want to hear, and that's not what Pharaoh wanted to hear. Drought is not what Americans want to hear, and they especially don't want to hear someone come in here and tell them that it's the cause and effect relationship between the violation of land Sabbaths and Jubilee laws and the drought that you see out in the West. That drought, by the way, these things that we call El Nino, so that we can have a scientific explanation for them. Did anybody ever ask, well, who's causing this El Nino effect then? We say, well, it's just cyclical. It's just natural. It just happens that way. That's the evolutionary philosophy trying to explain why it is that events transpire, why we have these problems. Well, today, ignored by most Americans until they see either their national forest burning or their hillside homes going up in flames, or a sudden increase in the price that they pay for their food, an ever-growing drought has been taking its destructive toll in the Great Plains of the western United States, most of the West. Now, Rick Ochoa, the weather program manager at the National Interagency Fire Center in Boise, Idaho, warns that it's headed into a sixth year of drought, and some areas are looking at 7 years of drought. Consistently warmer weather, a diminishing snowpack, shares some blame for such conditions, but agriculture's and the West's relentless, often wasteful thirst for cheap water remains the chief culprit. For example, irrigators in western Nevada are threatening war with a country club that wants green grass for a national golf tournament. Now, in a most perceptive and rewarding feature article appearing in the May 4th issue of National Geographic magazine, called Change of Heartland, America's Great Plains, the writer, John G. Mitchell, notes that the weather wasn't especially kind to the plains at the dawn of the new millennium. Drought swept the region from Montana and the Dakotas south into Texas and eastern New Mexico, and the high plains of eastern Colorado turned to powder. Backhoes and bulldozers were summoned to clear county roads of wind-blown dirt. Newspapers proclaimed 2002 to be the driest years since the Dust Bowl of the 1930s in parts of the northern plains. The year was the driest in more than 100 years. So the pumps and the windmills and the center pivot sprinklers sucked at the earth more urgently under the Panhandle plains. The level of the great Ogla aquifer plummeted closer to total depletion. And yet, once again, the lessons of recent history appear lost to most users of this nation's most precious limited natural resource, water. Siegfried Schubert of the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, who recently led a research team studying the causes of the 1930s Dust Bowl, told Nature News Service, "The Dust Bowl is unique in the last 100 years, and that's because of the unusual combination of Pacific and Atlantic effects." In believing that unusual sea surface temperatures, NASA's climate researchers feel their work could help predict future dry spells, and demonstrates that tiny changes in ocean temperature can have a massive impact on the land. Now think of that. It's what they call the Pacific and Atlantic effect. What causes higher ocean temperatures? What causes higher ocean temperatures? Has it ever occurred to us that there is, in fact, a God out there in outer space who controls the destinies of men and nations on planet Earth? I know it's a wild concept here in the 21st century, but let me throw it out for your consideration. We have totally rejected this concept that there is a God, a creator out there, in favor of evolutionary philosophy. But just perchance, there just might be a God, and just perchance we see some debilitating effects. Could it be that this God is sending us a signal that maybe we should be paying closer attention to? And if he's sending us a signal, where did the message come from and where is it located today? We'll stand by, we'll take a break, and we'll be right back with more right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement only. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Tonight's report on drought. Well, called by some one of the three worst ecological blunders in history, the Dust Bowl was a mere 50 years in the making. Donald Worster, in his authoritative investigation, Dust Bowl, the Southern Plains in the 1930s, published by Oxford University Press in 1979, vividly describes this tragedy and sees more than just nature on the rampage. Let me underline this word nature and read that sentence again. Donald Worster, in his authoritative investigation, Dust Bowl, the Southern Plains in the 1930s, published by Oxford University Press in 1979, vividly describes this tragedy and sees more than just God on the rampage. What is nature anyway? Is it something that you can see, taste, touch, smell, or feel? Nobody likes to use the word God or creator. We like to use the word nature or him or the big thing up there or any kind of a term that will avoid a direct reference to a creator. You know, a real guy that's out there and says, hey, listen, thou shalt not steal, or thou shalt not commit adultery. Sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told. He goes on to say, my argument is that there was, in fact, a close link between the Dust Bowl and the Depression, and that the same society produced them both, and for similar reasons. Both events revealed fundamental weaknesses in the traditional culture of America, and the one in ecological terms, the other in economic terms. Both offered a reason and an opportunity for substantial reform of that culture. Could it be that there was a God who was demanding reform in the culture by sending upon us a plague, economic, and a drought, agricultural? I don't know. I'm just throwing out the ideas. You mull it over in your brain. You're a big kid. You're probably smart enough to figure this out once we give you the facts. Well, in explaining this meaning, Worster points out that capitalism was developed or has developed an enduring ethos that seeks to give the economic culture continuity. The ecological values of that ethos include nature must be seen as capital. Man has a right, even an obligation, to use this capital for constant self-advancement, and the social order should permit the encouragement and encourage this continual increase of personal wealth. It came about because the expansionary energy of the United States had finally encountered a volatile, marginal land, the Great Plains, destroying the delicate ecological balance that had evolved there. Now, we speak of farmers and plows on the plains and the damage that they did, but the language is inadequate. What brought them to the region was a social system, a set of values, an economic order, and there's no word that so fully sums up those elements as capitalism. Well, by the 1920s, farming and ranching had become for many a business, the object of which was not necessarily to make a living, but rather to make money, just as they objected to the social controls that they perceived Roosevelt's New Deal was trying to impose upon them. They also believed that nature would dare not thwart them in the managing of their business affairs. Thus, these same laissez-faire interests continued to extensively plow up the Great Plains, planting their wheat, and creating highly mechanized factory farms that produced unprecedented harvests. Now, as Worster states, there was nothing in the Plains society to check the progress of commercial farming, nothing to prevent commercial farming from taking the risks that it was willing to take for the profit that it seeked to make. And that's how and why the Dust Bowl came about. Well, I got to make a little editorial comment here. You mean to tell me that people plowing up the Great Plains caused the Dust Bowl? I thought that drought was caused by no rain. Why did it stop raining? Because they were farming up the Great Plains? Now, there is a cause and effect relationship that we can see scientifically. For instance, down in the Amazon basin, we're creating drought conditions. Yeah, that's right. Down in the rainforests of the Amazon. You see, in 1957, the average rainfall in the Amazon basin was 120 inches a year. Today, in 2004, about 50 years later, the average rainfall is 90 inches. Still rainforest, but 30 inches a year less rain. Why? Well, if you'll take a look out at a big outside your house, now go outside and you take a look at a good big mature tree. Just take one that's about 2 foot on the stump. And if you look at that tree standing up there 100 feet in the air, I've got lots of them around my house. Every one of those trees gives off about 2,000 gallons of water per year. They got a big 4 or 5 syllable word that describes that, but the process is simple enough. The water that's being sucked up out of the ground through the root system and then given off of its leaves evaporates into the air. Thousands of trees doing that put a lot of moisture into the air. That moisture goes up, forms clouds, and then that moisture condenses around little dust particles, forms droplets, and falls back down to the ground. And our rain gauge measures that rainfall. Here's what the bottom line is. There's about 10 inches of rainfall on average around the world. In some places, that 10 inches of rainfall evaporates, goes back up into the air, and rains down a second time, and those regions have 20 inches a year. When it cycles 3 times, they have 30 inches a year, 4 times, and 5 times, and 6 times, and so on. Now, there's other factors, certainly. There are hurricanes out in the Atlantic Ocean that dump lots of rain on Florida and up the east coast of the United States, and there aren't any hurricanes to speak of out in Hawaii, and they got a mountain out there that rains 700 inches a year on average. And on the other side of the mountain, they have a desert. So there are certainly factors that come in. Now go over to the Sahara Desert. 2,000 years ago, it was farmland. Today, it's desert. And it's growing at the rate of 100 square miles a year. 100 square miles a year. And the people in what's known as the Sahel are out there busily cutting down every tree they can so that their goats can eat the leaves. And every time they cut down a tree, they lose 2,000 gallons of water, 2,000 gallons of rain. Well, you cut down enough trees, and pretty soon, you get desert. Now, there's another factor that comes into play, and there's a fellow named God. We call him God. He's actually got a name, but we call him God. And throughout the Bible, he talks about bringing drought upon people as a punishment. We read about Elijah. One time, he is accused of shutting up the heavens for 3.5 years. It didn't rain there in the Middle East. It didn't rain there in Palestine for 3.5 years, which precipitated the end of the Israelite Empire. You know, that's got a humongous economic impact when it doesn't rain for 3 years. No crops. People are struggling to survive. And people migrate, just like they did in the Dust Bowl regions of Colorado and Kansas and Nebraska. They migrated out of those regions and went to California, Washington, and Oregon. We called them Okies and Arkies. And of course, when that occurs, when there's a massive drought that lasts for many years and people run out of water like they did in Arizona, they used to have a lot of Indians down there, and there's a lot of irrigation canals. 500 years ago, there were huge populations of Indians down there irrigating the land, and then all of a sudden it quit raining. And all of those people had to move out. And we see the evidence of where they lived to this day in Casa Grande, Arizona. But those native people of 500 or 600 years ago disappeared. They had to leave. Drought again. Well, is it just cyclical and natural, or is it caused by somebody? And is the somebody, called God, causing this drought because of some reason? Does he have some motive? Is he doing this to accomplish some goal, some end? Well, the Dust Bowl was only an extreme example, however, of the serious drought which threatened the greater part of the nation in the 1930s. Yet if one uses a precipitation deficiency of at least 15% of the historical mean average to define a drought, the only states that escaped it from 1930 to 36 were Maine and Vermont. Let me repeat that. You know, we look upon the Dust Bowl of the Great Plains in the 1930s as being out here in Colorado, and Kansas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, North and South Dakota. But if we were to define a drought as being a deficiency of 15% of the historical mean average to define a drought, then only two states in the United States, Maine and Vermont, had normal rainfall during those 7 years, 1930 to 36. Intense heat also accomplished or accompanied this drought in many areas of the country. So you had above average temperatures, below average rainfall in, get this, 46 of the 48 states. Perhaps you've never heard that before. Well, centered around Liberal, Kansas, the Dust Bowl stretched 400 miles north to south and 300 miles east to west. This 151,000 square mile area included western Kansas, southeastern Colorado, northeastern New Mexico, and the panhandles of Oklahoma and Texas. It was in this region where the black blizzards of the 1930s struck with all of their fury. It was on April the 17th, 1935, that a 200-mile-wide storm with a 1,000-foot-high dust cloud rolled along the ground at speeds of 60 miles an hour, keeping some towns in nighttime blackness for more than 3 hours and stretched across Kansas, eastern Colorado, and into Texas and Oklahoma. Dust from storms such as these found its way to the streets of New York and Washington, D.C. Now, that's pretty awesome. But remember, this is just a handful of states, 151,000 square miles, centered out here in the heartland of America. 46 states during the Dust Bowl period had at least a 15% or greater deficiency in rainfall. What caused that? Why? Was there a god out there somewhere who stretched forth his hand and shut off the precipitation during the 1930s? And if so, what was the purpose? And why the economic collapse and the Dust Bowl working hand in glove to bring about such economic and ecological destruction and wreaking so much havoc in the United States? Why were we singled out for that? And indeed, does God bring drought on nations, cities, and empires to destroy them? Well, stand by. We've got to take another break. We'll be right back with more on drought right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, the genocidal policy of Global 2000 and this New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And now, our national leaders have subscribed to a plan created by the Club of Rome, along with the United Nations and the Trilateral Commission, and a whole host and plethora of other lesser policy-making think tanks, to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. And that's correct. That's 90% over the next 50 years. That's genocide, boys and girls, and let's not delude ourselves into believing that we're going to stop all of these mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians in their insane scheme to enslave the world and impose a new worldwide New World Order, a tyranny that they call the New World Order upon all of us. But you and I don't have to participate in our own demise. We don't have to help them, finance them, or stand helplessly by and do nothing. It's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let you and I prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000 and New World Order nightmare. Now, if you'd like to learn more about that, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. And my Subsistence and Survival School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, just go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send an email request for that free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about drought. Now, the estimated financial cost of just the 1934 drought alone amounted to one-half the U.S. cost in World War I. Did you catch that? The financial cost of just 1 year, 1934 drought, cost us one-half of what it cost us in 1917 and 18 in World War I. Now, by 1936, farm losses had reached $25 million a day, as more than 2 million farmers were drawing relief checks. You could look out the window and watch Kansas go by, was the way one Midwesterner put it to a reporter. The wind blew everything into old Mexico except the mortgage, was the observation of another farmer. And most farmers gladly accepted their relief in the form of federal dollars along with federal government and their inevitable reassurance, solicitation, and encouragement. However, when the New Deal policies attempted to become innovative, many Plains people turned hostile. The fate of the Plains lay in the hands of Providence, and Providence, not Washington, would see them come out all right, was a popularly expressed sentiment at the time. Now, what the Plainsmen needed was hope, of course, but the mature hope that does not smooth over failure, deny responsibility, or prevent basic change. They needed a disciplined optimism tempered with restraint and realism toward the land, but all that required a substantial reform of commercial farming, which neither Roosevelt nor most of his New Deal advisors were prepared or able to bring about. Even as it evolved toward a more comprehensive program, the New Deal did not aim to alter fundamentally the American economic culture. Washington became and remained throughout the decade a substitute for a benign providence, trying to give plainsmen their next year. Washington took the place of God. And as you can see in the story below by the New York Times, the reporter Kirk Johnson and Dean E. Murphy, and what has been said numerous times, that those who do not know or learn from history are bound to repeat its same tragic mistakes. Now, the next part of the story deals with development of a modern urbanized West based on water from the Colorado River. That's right, water pumped from the ground or the Colorado River. Was development of a modern urbanized West based on a colossal miscalculation? Was it because there was not enough water in the West to support the massive population that we now see there? Have we here in America done what the Indians did in Casa Grande, Arizona, overpopulate the land based upon water resources that were inevitably doomed to prove less than wholly adequate? Well, at 5 years and counting, the drought that has parched much of the West is getting much harder to shrug off as a mere blip in history. Those who worry most about the future of the West, the politicians, scientists, business leaders, city planners, and environmentalists, are increasingly realizing that a world of eternally blue skies and meager mountain snowpacks may not be a passing phenomenon, but rather the return of a harsh climatic norm. Continuing research into drought cycles over the last 800 years bears this out, strongly suggesting that the relatively wet weather across much of the West during the 20th century was a fluke. In other words, scientists who study tree rings and ocean temperatures say the development of the modern urbanized West, one of the biggest growth spurts in our nation's history, may have been based upon a colossal miscalculation. Well, let's take a little detour here and look at Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, the first 14 verses. Here's Deuteronomy chapter 28. In the first 14 verses are called the benefits, the blessings. Now listen to this. Here's God, or the guy that claims to be God. He comes along and he says, now listen up. It shall come to pass, if you shall hearken diligently unto the voice of the Eternal your God, to observe and to do all of his commandments, which I command you this day, that the Eternal your God shall set you on high above all the nations of the earth. Now I think there's one thing that we can all agree on. We Americans are not observing all of the laws of God. In fact, even the 65% of the American population that go to church every Sunday, I think, would freely admit, of course, we don't practice these laws. We're under grace. We're not under these laws, and we don't practice them. And then the other 35% would, I'm sure, freely admit that, yeah, we've thrown the Bible out of our public schools because we do not want to teach the Bible or the law of God to our younger generations coming up. So here's the guy comes out, here's the guy we call God, and he says, now, if you will do these things, follow my instructions, sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told. All of these blessings in verse 2, he says, shall come on you and overtake you if you will hearken unto the voice of the Eternal your God. Well, the opposite to that's very easy. If you don't hearken unto me, none of these blessings will accrue to you. Now, is one of the blessings that we're looking for rain in due season? He starts off in verse 3, says, blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the field. Blessed shall be the fruit of your body and the fruit of your ground, the fruit of your cattle, the increase of your kind, and the flocks of your sheep. We won't have any mad cow disease. We won't have any stillborns or we'll have births. You know, you ladies out there always count the toes on your newborn babies to make sure that there are no birth defects. You won't have any birth defects, he tells you. Verse 4 says, blessed shall be the fruit of your body, the fruit of your ground, the fruit of your cattle, the increase of your kind, the flocks of your sheep. Blessed shall be your basket and store. That's your food production. Blessed shall you be when you come in. Blessed shall you be when you go out. And the Eternal shall cause you, your enemies, your thine enemies, to rise up, or that rise up against you, to be smitten before your face. So when you go to war, you'll always win. And they shall come out against you one way and flee before you seven ways. You know, up until the Vietnam War, we had that. I guess you could say up till Korea. Every time we went to war, we beat them. He says, the Lord shall command the blessing upon you in your storehouse, and all that you set your hand unto you, he shall bless you in the land which the Lord your God gives you. The Eternal shall establish you a holy people unto himself, as he has sworn unto you, if you shall keep the commandments of the Eternal your God and walk in his ways. And that's the third time he's told you that. Third time here. He said, now you sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what I tell you over here, and all these blessings are going to come upon you. And all the people of the earth shall see that you are called by the name of the Eternal, and they shall be afraid of you. And the Eternal shall make you plenteous in goods, in the fruit of your body, in the fruit of your cattle, the fruit of your ground, in the land which the Lord swore unto you and unto your fathers to give you. And the Eternal shall open unto you his good treasure, the heaven, to give rain unto your land in his season, and to bless all the work of your hand. And you shall lend unto many nations, and you shall not borrow. Did you know that we Americans used to preside over the wealthiest, most productive economy in the world? Today, it's the sickest economy in the world. In 1950, we lent unto the nations of the world. Today, we're the net borrowers. So if you take a look at these blessings and benefits that we received in these first 14 verses, he says in verse 13, the Eternal shall make you the head, not the tail. Take a look at our foreign policy, you know, from 1850 to 1950, you know, we were the head, not the tail. And you shall be above only, and you shall not be beneath. That's if you hearken unto the commandments of the Eternal your God, which I command you this day to observe and to do them. And you shall not go aside from any of the words which I command you this day, to the right or to the left, to go after other gods, to serve them. Now you'll notice back in the 1930s, we changed the God of Abraham to the God of Washington, so that we could get handouts, so that we could get welfare and food stamps, so that we could get Department of Agriculture checks. But it begs a question. Now how come it stopped raining? You'll notice here in verse 12, he said, to give you rain unto the land in his season. Now we weren't short of rain. We were getting rain in due season here in the United States, and then it shut off in the 1930s. And it shut off right after the stock market collapse in 1929. And then we had two parallel problems. We had an economic problem and we had a drought problem. And that drought problem produced a tremendous migration of people out of the Great Plains to the West. Uh-oh. And now we notice that the rain is shut off in the West. And again, I ask the question, well, could it be because there is, in fact, a God out there in heaven who has acted over thousands of years of time upon populations of people and shut off their rain? Now, Elijah said, here about 1 Kings 17, 18, 19, that God had shut off the rain in Israel, and that caused a great forced migration out of that land. It so weakened them that they fell prey to the Assyrians who conquered them. Is that what's happening here in the United States? Take a look at these four hurricanes that just struck Florida. Could it be that he opened the windows of heaven and drowned you people in Florida and has shut up the windows of heaven and is burning the people of the West of California, New Mexico, Arizona? Now, it's just something for us to think about, isn't it? Hang on, we got to take another break here. We'll be right back with more on drought when we return, so don't go away. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by pre-arrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. All right, we're talking about drought. Have we made a colossal miscalculation in developing the Western United States? And why is it that for the last 5, 6, and 7 years, over vast portions of those 11 Western states, do we now see a drought? Now, the shift is making, and it is shifting many assumptions about how the West is run. Arizona, California, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming, the states that depend upon the Colorado River, are preparing for the possibility of water shortages for the first time since the Hoover Dam was built in the 1930s to control the river's flow. The top water official of the Bush administration, Bennett W. Reilly, said recently that the federal government might step in if the states could not decide among themselves how to cope with dwindling water supplies, a threat that riled local officials but underscored the growing urgency. Before this drought, we had 20 years of a wet cycle and 20 years of the most population growth ever, said John R. D. Antonio, the New Mexico state engineer who was scrambling to find new water supplies for the suburbs of Albuquerque, New Mexico, that did not exist 20 years ago. The latest blow was paltry snowfall during March in the Rocky Mountains, pushing down runoff projections for the Colorado River this year to 55% of average. Snowmelt is the lifeblood of the river, which provides municipal water from Denver to Los Angeles and irrigates millions of acres of farmland. The period since 1999 is now officially the driest in the 98 years of recorded history on the Colorado River, according to the United States Geological Survey. March was a huge wake-up call as to the need to move at an accelerated pace, said Mr. Reilly. He's the Assistant Secretary of the Interior for Water and Science. Some of the biggest water worries are focused here on Lake Powell, the vast blue diamond of deep water that government engineers created in one of the driest and most remote areas of the country beginning in the 1950s. From its inception, Lake Powell, the nation's second largest artificial lake after Lake Mead in Nevada, was a powerful symbol across the West. Some saw it as a statement of human will and know-how, others of just plain arrogance. Lake Powell, part of the Glen Canyon National Recreation Area, has lost 60% of its water and is now about the size that it was during the Watergate hearings in 1973, when it was in the process of filling up. White cliffs, 10 stories high, bleached by salts from the lake and stranded above the water, line its side canyons, and elsewhere, retreating waters have exposed mountains of sediment. The tourist economy here in Page, Arizona, has been battered. The National Park Service, which operates the recreation area, has spent millions of dollars in recent years just to lay concrete for boat launching ramps that must be extended every year, a process that one marina operator here calls chasing water. Daniel McCool, a professor of political science at the University of Utah and director of the American West Center, says Powell is the barometer of the drought because what has happened here is as much about politics, economics, and the interlocking system of rules and rights called the law of the river as it is about meteorology. Part of the lake's problem, for example, dates to a miscalculation back in 1922 when hydrologists overestimated the average flow of the Colorado River and then locked the number into a multi-state agreement called the Colorado River Compact. This compact, along with a subsequent treaty with Mexico, requires Lake Powell to release 8.23 million acre-feet of water each year below the river's dam, Glen Canyon, no matter how much water comes in. And that's because the river's real average flow was less than the 1922 compact. And Lake Powell very often released more than half of the water that the Colorado River actually delivered. But it did not really matter because the upper basin states were not using their share of the water. Now, communities from Denver to Salt Lake City and the Indian tribes with old water rights in their portfolios are stepping forward to stake their claims. Lake Powell, which has been called the aquatic piggy bank of the Upper West, is now vastly overdrawn. Now, if water levels continue to fall, Lake Powell will be unable to generate electricity as early as the year 2007, or perhaps even sooner. Some hydrologists are clearly worried, and it would be reduced more or less to the old riverbed channel of the Colorado River not long after that. Even now, the lake managers say that it would take a decade of historically normal rainfall to refill Lake Powell. Well, it's going to take 10 years to recover from the 6 years of drought that we've already endured. The population of California is now at around 36 million people. When I was a boy in Colorado, or excuse me, the California, rather, I should say, had a population of 14 million. It has nearly tripled, not quite, but it's on the verge of tripling in my lifetime. Now, that's pretty significant. You got three times as many people and half as much water running down the river. Obviously, something is going to have to be done, isn't it? What are you going to do? Well, they talk about desalinization. We'll go out to the Pacific Ocean and we'll desalt the ocean water, a very expensive process that is being done over in Saudi Arabia. The Saudi Arabians have tons of money to spend on desalinization because of their immense oil revenues. Where are you going to get the money to desalt or desalinize the Pacific Ocean for the 13 million people that live in the Los Angeles basin? You know, it's just a thought. Now, insufficient water for the Glen Canyon Dam turbines would be only the beginning. At that point, much of the lake bottom would be exposed, creating a vast environment for noxious weeds like tamarisk and thistle. The next step in the spiral would come at what is called Dead Pool, where decades worth of agricultural chemicals at the bottom of the lake would begin mixing more actively with the reactivated river. The question then, environmentalists say, is what would happen to the Grand Canyon just south of the dam? If we're only in the middle of this drought, then Lake Powell might be very close to some very dramatic problems, said Dr. John C. Darwin. It's Doran Wind, a retired geologist for the Geological Survey who lives near the lake. If water levels continue to fall, remember, this is 2004. 2005, 2006 is only 24 months until 2007, or sooner, perhaps in 2006. Now, what happens if we take Lake Powell's electrical generation off the grid? You know, America is already right on the verge of electrical breakdown. And we have been for many years. Think of this. California, which has been importing electricity, California, which has had electrical shortages for at least 10 years. Now let's take Lake Powell off the grid. What do you think is going to happen then? Well, Americans won't stand for the Grand Canyon being endangered, said John Weishaupt, the conservation director for Living Waters or Living Rivers, an environmental group in Moab, Utah, that advocates removing the dam at Glen Canyon and allowing the river to return to its natural course. In another year, they're going to be talking more seriously about Lake Powell in Congress. But the fact is that no one knows. The weather could change tomorrow. Many past western droughts have ended suddenly with a bang of precipitation. But some dry spells persisted for generations, from about 900 to 1300. 400 years, scientists say, periodic drought in the West was the norm. Only a few times during that period, according to the tree growth measurements, was precipitation anywhere near the relatively high levels of the 20th century. And that, boys and girls, was the period when the Indians were driven out of the southwestern United States. What is unusual is not the drought periods, but the above-average wet periods, said Dr. Robert Webb. He's a hydrologist with the Geological Survey who specializes in the Colorado River. The uncertainty has local, state, and federal officials along the 1,450-mile-long river scurrying to secure water allotments, while also preparing for the worst. What could be worse than 6 years of drought? Already in Las Vegas, the Regional Water Agency is removing the equivalent of a football field of grass every day from front lawns, playgrounds, and golf courses to save on outdoor watering. Further downriver, Arizona officials are pumping billions of gallons of water into the aquifers to save it for an even less rainy day. Well, we're about out of time. I'll have to take it up right here next time when we come back on drought tomorrow night. All right, the politically incorrect opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the staff or management of the network, or any affiliate radio station. For more information about the law, hour, and editorial review, please go to my website, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, just go to the website georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal. It says my time is up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. We'll take it up again, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.